The countdown is on for the 2021 ECEC Virtual Annual Convention and Legislative Summit, taking place on April 26th through the 28th. Don't miss the premier event in engineering, featuring a high-powered lineup of distinguished speakers from congressional representatives and political commentators to firm leaders and business consultants. Take advantage of unprecedented learning opportunities. For the first time, earn all 18 PDHs through live or on-demand education sessions. Network with your peers and meet with exhibitors through our reimagined virtual platform. The 2021 ACEC Virtual Annual Convention and Legislative Summit has everything you need to prepare your business to succeed. Register now at acec.org. Welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. The economy is looking up, hopefully. The reports that we have right now is that the worst of the pandemic shutdown should be behind us. For our industry, through our recent wave of COVID-19 surveys through the ACEC Research Institute, we've seen that there is some optimism among our industry that although majority of firms still feel that the condition of the economy is worse compared to March 1 of last year, that there is improving sentiment, and more firms continue to report that finances and cash flow are better than pre-pandemic levels. It's not an even recovery. Some firms are not feeling the recovery as quickly as others, but it seems like things are looking up. But there's no question that this economic shutdown, the recession, really threw a lot of curveballs that we had to deal with beforehand. And it took all hands on deck, leadership and management, to get out of it and to be poised for growth. And to talk about how can best position themselves, grow, and just deal with the results of an economic recession or the situation we found ourselves with COVID-19, I'm very, very pleased to be joined by Doug Reed. He is the CEO of civil engineering firm Meridian Associates, and he has led recession turnarounds before. He is an ACEC member, and I'm really pleased to have Doug joining us. Thanks for coming on the show.
Glad to be here, Jeff.
So, Doug, you know, what was your experience with the pandemic? You know, we heard from firms of varying sizes, and they all kind of had the same situation. They had pretty much turned to remote work on a dime, and they had to reevaluate their positioning. You know, how did you approach the shutdown?
Well, of course, what was unusual about this recession was almost immediately the office went from a bustling place to an empty place, as everybody was working remote. And actually, my first week on the job as president and CEO of Meridian was the first week when everybody was working remote. So other than the founders of the company who are transitioning to me, there were very few people in the office. So the logistics, of course, on the technical side, was simply making sure everybody had their computers at home, and arrangements for them to access the office for some of the large-scale printing and plotting that engineers need if they're involved with design. So that actually went pretty well, thank goodness to the internet and pretty high-speed internet and the fact that everybody has internet at home, at least in our case. This is was my fifth recession over my career. So I did have a chance to look at all of them in perspective, what was common about them and what was different. And certainly, we had just mentioned the big difference, of course, that everybody's continuing to talk about with COVID and the pandemic. But there are actually many similarities. I mean, we did see on an almost immediate 34% decline in the gross domestic product in this country. Huge knee-jerk reaction and stock market decline immediately as well. And we did see a significant bounce back later. If we go back to 2008, it was a banking crisis that led to the crash of the economy and the stock market. 2001, if some of you might remember Y2K, everybody was afraid the world was going to end. But there was also the dot-com bust that led to that recession. Then we go back to 1990, the savings and loans crisis that led to a decline and another recession. And then early on, about the time I was getting out of college, there was just very high interest rates, and those interest rates were stifling the economy. As I remember coming out of college about then, and there really were very few jobs in our industry. It was pretty hard for me to find my land my first job. But overall, I have seen the industry as being a fairly steady industry compared to a lot of others. I mean, speaking of dot-com bust, my friends who work for software and hardware companies, they went up and down like a yo-yo in the different recessions. Whereas infrastructure-focused firms, like engineering firms, tended to have a little bit more tempered decline. So for us at Meridian, we're very private sector focused on the real estate industry in particular, but also life sciences and institutional business. Surprisingly, those sectors kept right on going. As we watched, all of us have watched over the last year, we've seen the real estate market continue to surge. So I would not have guessed that. Because that is different than all of the other recessions where the real estate market was hit. So, from Meridian's point of view, our business continued and continued at a pretty
And
strong
this
pace.
was kind of a, I don't want to use the term manufactured, but it was a decision by governments across the world to essentially shut their economies down, right? So this was not a business cycle recession as we normally would see it, right? The economy was doing very well. Interest rates were low. Things were going along at a pretty good clip. This happened, externality, everything shut down. How do you,
Right.
as a leader, come in and given that experience that you have, seeing the effects of different types of recessions that were brought on by different pressures in the economy, coming into this circumstance, coming into the job right as things shut down, how did you poise Meridian to weather the storm, and how did you develop a strategy to get everyone together under the same page, to lead the firm under a unified mission?
Yeah, that's a good question. I had for the 10 years prior to joining Meridian, I'd actually had operated a sole proprietorship as a business consultant, largely to the infrastructure industry. So I was exposed to many, many different businesses, CEOs, and management styles. And then prior to that, several decades working for fairly high growth firms where change was constant. So what I do see is that some firms, don't handle change very well, and some do, and I'd say it's a minority that actually handle it well. But what we did very quickly is to develop a plan, essentially a business plan on how we were going to manage our business with everyone being remote. We still had to be concerned about remaining focused on our clients. Particularly our best clients, we had to stay focused on profitability, maximizing cash, and our key performance indicators like accounts receivables and utilization, tracking the number of opportunities in our backlog, were all things that occur in every recession, and in particular, but of course, things that we just should be always be looking at. But here was a little different because it was remote. So we had a plan that the big difference. Between this plan and other recession plans was the level of communication required, because you didn't always have clients, nor our vendors, nor employees in front of us. What we did see, though, is that virtually everybody shifted pretty quickly, thanks to internet and video platforms. So we all became Microsoft Teams or Zoom. Users and even our clients, the town boards who we work with our clients to approve real estate development projects, they all went offline. So that worked pretty well. But we were concerned about it, but overall, everyone just sort of rolled with it. And that made a
Did you
big difference.
notice that communication in some respects actually improved? like as far as, face time with clients, having that, not needing to have a scheduled physical meeting, but instead being able to jump onto a video conference or a quick, Zoom call, let's say, actually improve communication compared to pre-pandemic?
Certainly, the big difference is we had meetings through Zoom, which sometimes could be arranged very quickly, versus getting in a car and driving, especially if you had to get a number of people together who all needed to then have the time available to drive to a location and have a face-to-face meeting. So in some ways, meetings became really easy. Last week alone, we had one particular client with an urgent matter, and we were able to get groups of 8 to 10 people together on just a few hours' notice, and we did it 3 times last week. As a matter of fact, this morning we arranged another meeting, which is in about an hour, to do the same. We could not have done that if the expectations had been that we had to all drive somewhere and meet face to face. It just wouldn't have happened. So that became easy, and I do think that that may endure beyond this. Where, clients, for instance, don't have to pay for their consultants to drive around as much as they used to be. And so they like that idea. But there are times when we just need to go out to the site. I mean, in the built environment, you just have to sometimes go out and stand on the site and look at what's happening. And so in this one example, over the last couple of weeks, we did have to go out and take a look at some things so we could then talk more intelligently about it during the meetings. But that was the big thing. So there is the difference is when you have teams of people, whether it's on the client side or in a regulator's environment or our own team, it's a little bit more difficult to coordinate. So I've done 3 surveys of our employees since the pandemic started, with one of them was completed just last week, actually. So, we asked everyone how satisfied they were with working from home, and we had 50% of our employees said they're very satisfied, and another 25% said they're at least somewhat satisfied. So there's very few, there was actually 0 that said they were very dissatisfied. So, and then we asked what the key challenges were, and the number one challenge was communication amongst coworkers, because you're no longer sitting next to them. So we used to just be sitting at a desk next to them, or if they're in another office, that wasn't too bad to just pick up the phone and call them. But now that casual conversation doesn't happen. It has to be more arranged and scheduled. So that was the number one challenge that employees found. The other part about working remote is just not having access to the equipment, like the big scale plotters
that's
drawing,
for
instance,
a challenge.
And doing large volumes of reproductions and things like that. Those 2 areas are the most difficult. And then some of the other things that they report is the not surprising is they just miss the camaraderie, the social environment. Maybe mentoring is a little bit harder. So those are things that people report, and we were trying to, through good communications, to really pay a little bit more attention to it than we have.
I think that's an interesting point, because communicating with staff, the way that managing people has changed during this, because you're not physically there, you can't have a in-person staff meeting or a team meeting, and you have to make sure that you are adequately communicating to your direct reports or to your group to make sure that everybody's still on the same page. Keep morale up. How has, in your experience with your, I guess, frontline leaders, the managers who are the project leads, transitioned into that space where they maybe not have had to do this before? Have you seen kind of a natural leadership takeover, or has there been kind of a learning curve to go virtual on that?
Well, for us, we were fortunate in that we decided last summer that we would continue to make the investments that I knew were important to continuing to grow the firm. There are many firms in every recession and I would even say the majority of firms in a recession will pull back on things like training, on expenses, on conferences, on overhead related things. But I've learned over my career, and it's really talked a lot about in my book as well, Lead a Movement, is that it's so important to continue to invest. And if anything, in a recession, to figure out a way how to invest even more. So we began aggressively communicating about topics like project management. We actually met every week for an hour, simply talked about project management processes. We spent for several months, we met every single week to talk about customer relationships and sales. And so high level, much more than the employees had experienced before, but we wanted to maintain that focus. We also had an older project management software platform, which was also an accounting platform, and it's really one of the platforms that's most common in our industry. But we made an investment to transition to a newer version of it that was a cloud-based solution. So what that did is that gave all the employees all the employees, and particularly the managers, immediate access into our database on our projects, on the budgets, on who's working on what, on time sheets, and corporate financials right from their desktop at home. Something they didn't have before. They relied upon accounting to get them that information. But so it was an investment that was initiated before the pandemic, but what doesn't it was because of the pandemic. Maybe the first few months we held off on it, but by last summer we just wrote the check and implemented it, and it was disruptive, as some firms know. When you implement a new system like that, it's a lot of work and it's disruptive. But now the project managers and even staff have a lot of information at their fingertips that they didn't have before. So kind of just that access to information was just so much easier that I think that helped us to maintain focus on profitability, accounts receivables,
And I'm glad that you
deliverables,
mentioned
things
the
like that.
book, because I do want to mention that you did you're the author of Lead a Movement, The Insider's Guide to Powerful Strategy Execution. And it kind of goes back to that first question, and I will put a link to the book in the show notes of the episode. That strategy, the question of strategy, having one that is actionable, that you can put in the practice at least early on, the framework of something that will work, and then you refine it over time. I mean, really, what is the one probably trap that CEOs fall into if they don't have an effective strategy, or the trap that they fall into if they try to rush one, if one's not created immediately?
Right. One of the most common traps is that a CEO or a management team has a desire to move the company in a certain direction, and then may even orchestrate a strategic plan built around that vision. The challenge is that what I just said is it's their vision. It's a handful of people's vision. It's not all of the employees' vision. And they assume that because they're employees, that they're all going to line up and support their vision. Even if they might spend a lot of time explaining to everybody why their vision is important, what they big trap is that they don't spend the time to get sincere buy-in on that. So they don't get sincere buy-in on the whole plan. And then when you get into the execution phase, that's when you find out. That's when you find out when everyone who just all of a sudden has an excuse of why they're too busy to work on some new initiative. And really what it is they never really bought into it in the first place. So what the book spends many chapters talking about is how then to prepare to enter into a strategic planning program. And that's far more important and more intricate than actually the strategic planning process itself. So it identifies, for instance, really knowing who the people are in your company who are the ones you need to who do influence things. We've sometimes had there's a story in the book about how the person who worked in their document production room ended up, we found out, was one of the more highly influential people in the company because that person just knew everything that was going on and everybody got their gossip from that person. And so if that person supported something or was against something, it made a big difference on the CEO's ability to advance something. So we had others, like one particular division manager who was not respected by others. And as a result, we ended up not including that person into the strategic plan, knowing that if that person had an opinion, it would almost like create a barrier all by itself. So really understanding that sincere buy-in is important. And then there's techniques about letting the employees contribute to the plan and shape the plan. So therefore they see something that's in it for themselves, and that's how it gets supported. And so that's, and then how you actually execute the plan again is very dispersed. Have a big percentage of the employees that in one way or another contribute to the outcome of the plan. So that's overall what the book has, a lot of stories from real life, from different environments where I've worked, but also in different forums where I've had the opportunity to talk to people about their own situations. And I've interviewed a number of CEOs in that book who then share their story in that book
Yeah,
about successes and
it is
barriers to that
interesting how
success.
intricate and challenging strategic planning can be if done properly. The importance of that employee engagement, enrollment into the plan so they feel ownership and are contributing to that mission, that sense of mission, and getting that buy-in early so that it is, and then throughout the process, it's just not getting the buy-in for the plan. But obtaining that buy-in through the execution of the plan, and making sure that people are feel seen.
Right. Yeah. Because, right, Jeff. So most strategy fails. There's a lot of surveys of our, not just our industry, but businesses as a whole. Very high percentage of strategic plans end up really not going anywhere, not achieving the results that they intended. And it's really because of this lack of appreciation into whose support you need to advance such a plan and how important it is that the company's plan be closely aligned with your employees. And that's a process to go through. So it's part psychologist and it's a part listener and part communicator. So with all those elements, it is, a formula one must follow to be able to have degree of certainty that you will be
Absolutely. And
successful
again, the book is Lead a Movement,
in
The
executing the plan.
Insider's Guide to Powerful Strategy Execution. And again, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And Doug, I really do appreciate the time you've taken out of the day to speak to us. Hope that 2021 is much better to you than 2020 and to everyone at the firm, and that we are able to get through this safely and quickly.
Thank you very much. And it will be interesting in 2021 as we evolve and then come to realize, just what the new normal will be. So we're still not sure,
We're all
right?
going through it together. And again, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We'll see you again next time.